Great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price. And it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
Good Wednesday, everybody. Hope your day is off to a great start. LZ, there's stuff happening in the world right now, in the sports world. We've got baseball coming back. We've got players that are opting out. We got players that are testing positive for coronavirus. There's stuff happening in the sports world today. This is exciting.
This is very, very, very exciting. I wouldn't want to be Jack Del Rio, though, right now, if you're thinking about all the world of sports statistics. That is one person I would avoid wanting to be, but everyone else I want to be a part of.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. There is a ton of stuff that is good news, and then there's some stuff that is not good news. And then there's just some stuff, LZ, that comes into the category of this is the world we're living in right now. And I think that's right where Avery Bradley falls in. Avery Bradley has decided not to rejoin the Lakers when they restart, not to go into the bubble because of family concerns. He has a child that has a history of having difficulty recovering from some respiratory illnesses. And obviously with coronavirus, it attacks the respiratory system. So he has opted not to go in, and it makes perfect sense. Obviously, he wants to be with his Laker teammates, but this is a decision that he has to make. And they're not going to have him, so the Lakers are going to go into that bubble without one of their guys who was a very important player, averaging about 8.5 points a game, a regular starter on this team. So the Lakers have to make some adjustments going into this bubble.
Yeah, yes, they do. And, you know, first of all, I applaud Avery Bradley for his priorities being lined up accordingly. You know, I know that we want to win a championship. I know that he's an important piece to that. If he wasn't an important piece, the Lakers wouldn't have him as a starter when he's healthy. I saw him the last weekend of the NBA, you know, that March 8th or so weekend, and he was outstanding in both games against the Clippers as well as against the Bucks. So he's going to be missed. And, you know, the person that they decide to go after needs to be able to be somewhere that they can rely on, because Avery Bradley was reliable. You know, you knew he was going to be in the right places on the court. You knew he was going to take care of business off the court. He was a responsible addition to the team. Can you see where I'm going with this, Travis?
Reliable. Well, I have responsible. A rough idea.
do you see where I'm going when I say on and off the court?
Good decision maker. Yes.
Good decision maker. Yes. A good contributor to that will be the society of the bubble NBA players. Someone who you don't have to worry, who may take off real quick just to release some steam and come back and infect the entire team, if not the league, with coronavirus. Like, these are the things you need to think about in terms of who do you want to bring in to replace a responsible, talented player like Avery Bradley.
So with that in mind, and I'm sure you had nobody specifically that you were thinking of when you were laying out the things that you would like to have with that replacement, what do you make of J.R. Smith, LZ? Because it appears that he has emerged as a top replacement candidate to replace Avery Bradley. J.R. Smith is familiar with LeBron James. J.R. Smith has been working out. There's been rumors about J.R. Smith coming back to the league at some point. Does J.R. Smith fit the mold of the person that you just described?
Is my Comrex broken? I thought I laid out clearly the qualifications I think would be important for when you bring in someone in this little circle. I don't know if the dude who threw soup at one of his assistant coaches can be relied upon to stay trapped in this bubble for months and months and months and not do anything that could risk the health of the team, or if not the whole league as a whole. Listen, Novak Djokovic, who I talked about yesterday, is the number one tennis player in the world. He is now responsible for spreading coronavirus to three other top-tier players, two of which are also in the top 10. And, oh, by the way, who else, Travis? I mean, think about it. It's like they're still telling who else, because if you infected the players, then you probably infected other people who are helping to put the tournament together. This is what happens when you have one person who doesn't abide by the rules, what they can do. One person organized all of this, and that one person has now infected several other top 10 tennis players, and God knows who else, who are involved in putting that event together, in addition to all the fans. So I go back to the conversation about J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith is not the number one basketball player in the world. But he still has the same sort of tendencies not to give a damn about some of the rules that are in place. Do you trust J.R. Smith, not as a basketball player, because I love what he brings to the court. I love the shot. When he gets hot, he is as good as any shooter in the league. But do you trust him off the court, Travis, for months and months and months to follow the rules to the law to ensure the safety and health of everyone in the organization?
Here's why I think it might be worth doing. LeBron James. That LeBron might be able to keep him in the bubble, might be able to keep him from making all those decisions that you just described. I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but they just put, he's played 79 playoff games with LeBron. That's the fourth most amongst any teammates that LeBron has played with. So he has familiarity with LeBron. He has familiarity with the NBA postseason. And perhaps if this were a season long deal where you had to go through, 9 months of doing this, I wouldn't love his chances. If you had a couple of months, and this is maybe what we're talking about. We're talking about basically August and September and a little bit into October. If this thing goes, if the Lakers advance to the NBA Finals, which we all, hope and expect them to do, maybe he can make it a couple months. I've got my toes, my fingers, my hairs, and everything else crossed, LZ, hoping, trying to talk myself into this, because Avery Bradley leaving is not a fatal blow. It does not sink the Lakers. This is not Anthony Davis or LeBron James or anything like that where you're saying, oh, okay, our chances went from really good to we got to get lucky. It's not that. But their chances have gone from we're the team to beat, we've got the two best players, or the two best combo, and we've got some supporting pieces that are really, really good, that fit really well together with what we're doing here. One of those supporting pieces is no longer there. It's not catastrophic, but it does matter. So you do need to find somebody that can give you some of the things that he was giving you. And I think J.R. Smith checks a number of those boxes. The off-the-court stuff, you're right. That maybe that is the ultimate, if we're doing some scales here and you put, okay, he can shoot, he's familiar with LeBron and playoffs, it starts to go one way. And then you just put, J.R. Smith off the court on the other side of the scale, it slams back down the other way. That's very likely. But you need to find somebody. The pool of guys that you can choose from is not particularly deep. You don't know exactly what Deion Waiters is going to do. You have to reintroduce him to the team at some point, get him up to speed, acclimated with the team at some point. That really isn't an issue with JR because he's played with LeBron as often as he has. So I'm not dismissing it just out of hand because he may go and want to go spend some time away from the bubble, which, is a real concern. But if he can say, I won't, if LeBron can be the guy that can maybe make, make is the wrong word, but convince him that it's not in his best interest to go out and bring something back into the bubble, then I'm not a hard no the way that you are.
I'm not a hard no as much as I'm going to need JR to wear like two of those rings.
Those are like tracking a belt.
Yeah, exactly. because I like what he brings to the court. And I know that people always go back to that play in the finals in game one where he appeared to have lost track of his time and his score. And I know that's a problem. That could what could happen. But I also know he's the one that got the offensive rebound at a critical moment against Kevin Durant lined up at the free throw line. So he brings you good stuff too now, in addition to some of the decision making that makes you want to scratch your head. The only problem is that this is a scenario, guys. This is a scenario, though, guys. In which, if you were Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen, you'd be asking the same thing about Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
Like, we don't question if Dennis is going to bring it on the court, but can we trust that he's going to do all the right things off the court in a bubble for several months and doesn't endanger the team, if not the entire league? And I'm not trying to throw shade at him. It's just that his own history makes me wonder out loud, can I trust him? Can I trust him? Because, listen, no one's going to remember that we had this god-awful pandemic, stopped all of sports, and that's the reason why LeBron James didn't win a championship this year, because someone brought the coronavirus to the team, and they had to have the squad had to sit out for 2 weeks in quarantine, and were eliminated in the playoffs. We're not going to remember those details. We're going to remember the Lakers didn't win, right? So
yes.
I'm thinking about all of these factors when it comes to who do we bring into the fold, and his own history just has me questioning whether or not off the court, he's going to be able to handle what they're asking players to do.
I'm a little reluctant to even ask this because I think it might be a stupid question, but I know that the poll of off the court stuff is very powerful. I know that the desire to go and live your life is very powerful. And to say to yourself, you know what, for the better part of 60 or more days, I mean, 60 to 75, 80 days, I'm going to have to live at this hotel. I'm going to see the same 30 people every day. I'm going to eat in the same restaurants every day. And I'm going to interact with the same people over and over and over again. These are adults with free will. Are we really that skeptical of somebody not being able to for 2 months just to be able to stay in a lane? I get that it would be difficult over a really super long period of time. But if LeBron James and everyone and Anthony Davis and all these guys can do it, why can't J.R. Smith or other people with the inclinations of a J.R. Smith just say, you know what, for 2 months, I would love to go down to Miami and hang out. But for 2 months, I cannot do it. Is it that big of an ask?
You know, that's a great question. There's this term floating around out there right now, Travis, that I'd never heard of. It's called quarantine fatigue, in which, you know, people are saying that they're running out of their houses and interacting in large groups and going to restaurants without masks and not taking any precautions because they're tired of following the rules. Now, I'm one of those people that never gets tired of trying to live. So I don't have quarantine fatigue. I'd be wearing my mask because I carry hand sanitizer with me everywhere. You can ask Keyshawn. I was squirting him up with hand sanitizer while we were protesting, even though we didn't touch anybody, just because I was being abundantly cautious with my health and the health of my loved ones because I didn't want to bring anything back. That's me. But when you look down these streets, what do you see, Travis? I see an increase, a significant spike in coronavirus cases, including hospitalizations. I continue to see images of people, whether they be in Vegas, whether they be in Oklahoma, just living their lives. So if the regular person, to your point, can get fatigued from quarantine, I'm going to assume the person who's used to doing things, let's say a little bit more by his own rules, may also suffer from a little quarantine fatigue. It may just be like, oh, maybe not Miami, maybe nothing crazy like Miami, but maybe they just decided just to get off the out of the bubble for a second and just have some tacos with the same people, to your point. And that's the one visit that causes the trouble.
They got some decisions to make. Avery Bradley not going to go into the bubble. We got an update from the FBI and from NASCAR on the noose found in Bubba Wallace's garage. That is next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. See, I think this is good news. The FBI and NASCAR determined that the noose that was found in Bubba Wallace's garage was not placed there to intimidate or threaten Bubba Wallace, that it had been there already, that it had been there as long as the fall of 2019, that it was not a hate crime, and that it just happened to be the garage that Bubba Wallace was assigned to, and that it was a rope that was used to close a garage door, a garage pole. The initial that this was not a hate crime is good news, but where I keep coming back to, LZ, and the second I read the story yesterday afternoon, I'm thinking, so you're telling me that this is a sport that has Confederate flags all over the place, that has drivers that are using the N-word on video games, and we'll get to the son of Mike Skinner a little bit later on in the program, who said that Bubba Wallace should be dragged around the pits by that particular rope. Do you guys just have nooses lying around the track? I mean, that's the explanation? No. We didn't do a hate crime. No one in this organization did a hate crime. Nobody put that noose in that garage as a means to intimidate the only black driver on our circuit. We just had a noose lying around, man. What's the big deal? That's the takeaway? It seems crazy to me. I guess it's a better option than somebody put it there on purpose, but not by much.
Well, first of all, the first thing I tweeted on the news was thank goodness. Thank goodness, because contrary to popular belief, I'm not rooting for a narrative in which people are threatening Bubba Wallace's life over his stance on the Confederate flag. I'm not rooting for the story that says America has this level of hate in its heart and that white people want to kill black people and all that BS. That's not what I root for. I know that some people may listen to me, may view my comments maybe on CNN or some other network or something, and assume that I was disappointed that it wasn't a hate crime. So let me first say I was relieved, genuinely relieved that the FBI found that it wasn't a hate crime. But to your point, Travis, the FBI didn't say it wasn't a noose.
Right.
And NASCAR didn't say it wasn't a noose. And for those of you who are running around trying to say that Bubba Wallace faked it.
No, please.
He didn't fake it. He wasn't the one who found it. He wasn't the one who decided to announce it. He wasn't the one in charge of investigating. He was the one responding to what he believed was a threat to his life. That's what he was doing. And all of us in media who were reacting in a passionate way about this topic were also responding to a noose being in his garage, understanding the history of the United States and in that region of the world in particular, the last state to have a lynching, by the way, the state that had two nooses found on a college campus less than 2 years ago, by the way. Come on, somebody. Let's not act like, you know, this ain't what we're talking about. This is still the Deep South. It's still Alabama. They still got a thinly veiled a rendition of the Confederate flag as a state flag. So come on, somebody. The governor did blackface in college. So come on, somebody. Let's not act as if that's not a legitimate reason for Bubba Wallace to respond the way that he did. But I am very relieved that it wasn't a hate crime, Travis. And I also am relieved to know that the people who followed him on Monday, pushing his car, saying they stand with him, I'm relieved to know that it is possible that none of them were involved with that news being there.
Yes.
And that makes me very happy.
No,
very happy.
That one of his fellow NASCAR people, whether it's a driver or a pit crew member or any of the other staffers that are involved in a to put on a race, that they didn't make that news, tie that news and place it in there. That's really good news. That there was not one of those guys that was pushing his car or giving him a hug or telling him that they love him and support him was actually the person when they walked back into the garage was like, hey, I was the guy that put it in there. Gotcha. You know, I'm very happy with that.
But
there's the other side of this too, that it was there and that no one decided to, you know what? What is that? Why the hell is that in here? Why, you know, get that thing out of here? Because let's be honest, LZ, a noose is a very specific thing. If I ask 100 people, what is a noose and what does it look like? We would all give a definition that is virtually identical, right? Yes. We know exactly what it is. It's that loop. And then it's the rope coiled around on top of itself, right above the loop. We know exactly what it is. So this idea that this is a garage pull or anything else, like, come on, man, if it's tied like that, and the FBI is calling it a noose and the NASCAR is calling it a noose, it's a noose. And somebody tied that rope in that shape to use it for maybe not that particular hate crime, but someone thought it would be funny to have a noose. Somebody thought it would be something. I don't know, funny might not be the right word, but to have a noose in a garage at a NASCAR track, and no one thought to get the thing out of there. No one said, dude, what the hell is that? Goes, no, dude, stop. That's ridiculous. Get that thing out of here. It was there, and it had been there, according to this the investigation, for nearly a year at least. So while it's good news that someone didn't do it over the weekend and hang it specifically in Bubba Wallace's garage, you still got a problem. This is a perfect example of where this sport is, where that would just be allowed to lie around for the better part of a year, and no one said, dude, get that piece of trash out of here. We're not doing that here. People already think we're rednecks. People already look at our sport on TV and see stars and bars everywhere. We already got people riding around in pickup trucks flying this thing and over the top. Get that piece of you-know-what out of here. No, it was just there. Yes. That's part of the problem as well.
It was there, and apparently it was in multiple locations. And so you sit here, and to your point, Travis, is that if you're in a Talladega garage with your history, and you can't tell me that no one knew that was a noose in terms of the tie, of the way it was knotted. And, I mean, I'm not a NASCAR driver, but I've been in some garages. I don't recall the noose being the choice of a garage pull.
No.
I remember, you know, the little Roger and I were talking. Remember the little rope with the little red ball at the end? Like, I know about
those. I'm looking at one right now. I've said this before. I do this show from my house in my garage. I can see the rope from the garage door with the little red knob at the end. I know exactly. Yeah. I mean, we know what that looks like.
We know what that looks like. Now, I don't know if the door is heavier for the NASCAR garages, and thus they need a stronger rope or a stronger tie or something. But you can't tell me when the garage door is up and that rope is hanging it like the way it's hanging, that it doesn't look like a freaking noose. Like the historic noose. Not right. The I'm looking at it, it's a garage tie. No, it looks like a freaking noose. A threatening noose. The kind of noose that would make every single black person, when they see it, shudder. That's the kind of noose that it looks like. When I saw the images, I was like, why is this okay? Why is this a healthy alternative? Like, I'm relieved that Bubba Wallace's life wasn't directly threatened. I am relieved and I'm thankful and I'm apologetic, you know, for assuming that somebody in the crowd behind him threatened his life. I'm very relieved by that, and I'm apologetic for assuming that someone behind him in that picture threatened his life. But it was an assumption based upon facts. All the facts, the history of the state, the history of the race, the history of the Confederacy and what it represents, the fact that we got men hung in our own state and they're trying to tell us they tied nooses and killed themselves and we're waiting on the investigation for that. The fact that Alabama just had two nooses on a college campus less than 2 years ago. I'm relieved that it wasn't a Bubba Wallace, but I'm not relieved that people are saying it's always been there as a oh, well, then everything's okay kind of moment. No, everything still isn't okay. It was a noose.
Yeah, and it had been there for a year or since last fall. I mean, we're in summer of 2020, and they're saying it had been there since fall of 2019. That's nearly a year, and no one thought to get rid of it. Excuse me. Bubba Wallace was on CNN last night. He was on with Don Lemon, and he said that no matter what happens, this is not going to break him.
And in my statement on Sunday night, this will not break me. None of the allegations of being a hoax will break me or tear me down. It will piss me off, absolutely. But that only fuels the competitive drive in me to shut everybody up, to get back out on the racetrack next weekend in Pocono and showcase what I can do behind the wheel under tremendous amounts of BS, whatever it is you want to say. It won't break me. You won't tear me down. Again, I will still stand proud of where I'm at.
And that's what you want to hear. I mean, that he's in the middle of, like we talked about yesterday, he's got a races to run that are coming up very quickly, and he's the only driver that needs to go on CNN and talk about this stuff and be the focal point of all of this, that he's got more on his plate. He's got more on his to-do list than any of these other drivers, and I'm glad that he's going to continue the fight. All right. Baseball is back. They have a schedule. It's going to start July 23 or 24. And I have some numbers for you, LZ. They're going to make you realize just how bad of an idea a 60-game season is. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24-7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security. Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24-7 access to licensed agents.
60 games. That's how many games Major League Baseball is going to play. They did not get the expanded playoff field that they were hoping to get because they couldn't come to an agreement on how to do that. We're going to have the designated hitter in both leagues. We're going to have a runner start on second base in extra inning games. I think those are good ideas. I think the designated hitter should be in both leagues. I think that extra inning games beyond 10 innings are pretty silly. Let's end those things as quickly as possible. The 60 games, LZ, is the part that's just so incredibly goofy and so incredibly risky because you're going to have some stuff that happens in 60 games that would not happen over the course of a regular season. You ready for some numbers?
Yes, I am.
The Colorado Rockies, who finished a full major league season at 71-91, 20 games under 500, a bad baseball team, 20 games under, through 60 games last year, were 37-23. They were 37-23. Okay. The Miami Marlins, who were the worst team in baseball, okay, had a 60-game stretch in that season last year where they went 29-31. They were about a 500 team, the worst team in the league. Over 60 games, over 2 months, was 29-31. That probably doesn't get you in, but it might be close. You had the Washington Nationals got off to a 19-31 start last year and won the World Series. They don't go to the playoffs with that sort of record. You had the Pittsburgh Pirates at the All-Star break, who were two games up on the Cardinals. At the end of the season, they were 22 games out of first place. Okay, so these are examples of both good teams not being off to a good start and getting in, and bad teams who got off to a great start that faded down the stretch. Here's the one that should really, really give everybody a little bit of pause. The Dodgers have won the National League West 7 seasons in a row. In those seven seasons, 4 times in those 7 seasons, through 60 games, the Dodgers have been within 4 games of 500, which means through 60 games, they're just okay about half the time. Half the time, they're really good, and they're running away with it like they did last year, and they just hammered the gas, and they pulled away from everything. But 4 of those 7 times through 60 games, they were within 4 games of 500, which means if somebody like the Rockies gets out 37-23, and the Dodgers are kind of spinning their wheels right around 500, guess what happens? The Rockies go to the postseason, and the Dodgers, with the deepest pitching staff, the deepest position roster, one of the best managers, one of the best teams in baseball, they're sitting there going, wait, but we had another 100 games to go. This is the problem with the 60-game season.
And to your point, Travis, when you know you don't have a lot of season left to right any wrongs, you end up start pressing. You know, I remember, our good friend George Sedano, used to always say, it's just baseball. When people go through long stretches of hitless streaks or, giving up a run every inning, oh, it's just baseball. These fluky things are going. It's just baseball. And because you don't have the luxury of saying it's just baseball, if you have a hitting streak of 5 games, you're feeling like you've been hitting for the entire season. Mm-hmm. Similarly, if you have a hitless streak of 5 games, you may have to be benched because the manager doesn't have the luxury of saying it's just baseball. because you chop 100 games off a season, you don't have a long runway to correct things. So now I'm wondering if we're going to be pressing if we do hit those moments. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because you know you have to get out of this, and you can't naturally just let the ebb and flow of the season automatically correct itself because you've trained your muscle memory to swing in a certain fashion. You're just in a rough patch, but you trust your swing. Now you're going to be double-guessing everything because you don't have a lot of time. You don't have a lot of runway. You only got 60 games. 10 games is huge.
It's massive.
Huge.
It is massive. Look, there is nothing that you can do that is more detrimental to your baseball ability than to try harder. It's an oxymoron where you hear this with baseball people all the time. You know what I need to do is I need to try a little easier. That when blank is going bad, you need to try easier. You need to just kind of let it happen. That when you're through, you're in a 2-for-20 skid and you can't get the ball out of the infield, you want to squeeze the bat harder and harder. You want to swing harder and harder. You want to be more aggressive. You want to swing at more pitches. And now all of a sudden, you're 2-for-35. It doesn't work like that in baseball. There are some sports where you can bear down and push harder and really try to fight your way through these things. Baseball is not one of them. You just kind of need to go the other way and try easier. And it's not you don't try and just kind of throw it up to the gods and hope that it happens. But you need to, like you just said, you need to follow your routine. I do swing at this pitch. I don't swing at this pitch. I like to go after the first pitch. I don't. You need to do what you do. And to your point, I don't have time to do that anymore. My manager doesn't have time to look at
right.
it. I always remember this because I remember interviewing him a million times, and he would say it, and he was right just about every time. Eric Karras, when he played for the Dodgers, was a slow starter. And his thing was always, mm-hmm. look, at the end of the season, look at my numbers. They're going to be what I've always given you. I'm going to give you about 30 home runs. I'm going to drive in about 100 runs. I'm that guy. Don't worry about it. I will get there. Well, under these circumstances, if you have a bad 12-game stretch, that's a fifth of the season, okay?
Right.
A fifth of the 12 games is about a week and a half worth of baseball, and it's now 20% of the season. Whereas before 12, whatever, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Now it matters immensely because of all those numbers I give you. Colorado Rockies were not good. They would have made the playoffs. The Washington Nationals were the best team in baseball last year, or they're the World Series champions at least. They don't sniff it. The Dodgers they get off to a great start, which they do about half the time, they're going to cruise. If they get off to a slow start, which they do about a half the time, they might miss altogether. This is what baseball has put themselves into. And I get it that you weren't going to get 162 no matter what. But you could have had 80. You could have had 100.
Right.
And 100 is a hell of a lot better than 60. Because by the time you get to 100, this stuff has kind of worked itself out. You kind of have an idea of who the good teams and the bad teams are. At 60, you just don't.
Right.
It's baseball.
I mean, it is just baseball, normally speaking. But now it's just pressure. Because what we joked about before a couple of weeks ago, Travis, 60 games is about, what, 5 games in the NFL?
Uh-huh.
60. I mean, this is what we're talking about. So to help you understand, imagine an NFL season with 5 games.
Right.
That's the percentile cut that we're referring to. And we certainly know stretches that the New England Patriots have had over 5 games that made us go, what's wrong with New England?
Yes.
And then they go on and win the Super Bowl. This is what we're talking about. It's like that, where the Dodgers could very well be New England, but with 5 games in the season, the entire thing can be derailed, not because they're not talented, but because an abbreviated season of this magnitude allows for all kinds of fluky things to happen. And when fluky things happen, you end up with fluky champions.
Think about it like this, Ilse. I want to kind of go with your idea of a 5-game NFL season, and that's what we're talking about with baseball. In a regular NFL season, a 16-game NFL season, if your team gets out to a 1-2 start, do you feel like the season's over? Of course not. Of course not, right? If your team starts 1-2 in the regular season, you're thinking, okay, you know, that's not great, but you know, we got 13 games left to go. We'll figure this out, especially if you're a good team. If you're a good team and you get off to a 1-2 start, you're like, all right, whatever, we'll get it done. If you get off to a 1-2 start in a 5-game season, you're basically cooked because somebody's going to go 5-0 and a whole bunch of teams are going to go 4-0, so or 4-1. So you are putting yourself in an almost impossible position to get out of it. That's what we're talking about with baseball. If you have a bad 2 weeks, that's probably a wrap because two weeks essentially is a quarter of the season. So good. I love the idea of putting a runner at second base to start extra innings. I love the idea of having a designated hitter. I don't even hate the idea of an expanded playoff if ultimately that's where we get to, and instead of 10, we have 12 or 14. That's okay. That's what the rest of the leagues do. About half the field makes the playoffs, about half they don't. Baseball, only about a third of the teams make the playoffs. So if you want to open that up, that's great. We'll see. Shortening this season is going to be so weird. It may be exciting. It may be fun, especially if you're a fan of a bad team, because this might be the only way you get in. But if this is a regular deal, no thanks. No thanks. All right. I'm a little worried, LZ, about our next snake draft, because this is not my area of expertise.
Sir?
Not my area of expertise. The greatest music videos of all time. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Yeah. You know what that means. It's time again for The Morning Show. It's a snake draft. Asterisk edition. That's right.
It's a snake draft.
It's Keith's voice, but he won't be involved on this one. But guys, I was surfing around the channels a couple days ago, and I came across a classic channel. Now, you might remember this. You got to close your eyes and think. MTV. And, of course, there were no music videos to be found. Yes, no music videos we found. In fact, there were reruns of like New Jersey, the kids in New Jersey. I forget what it's called.
Jersey Shore.
Yes, Jersey Shore. Yes, woo-hoo! That's what I was watching. So
you
anyway.
Said the kids in New Jersey. That is hilarious.
Yeah, buddy.
I knew it was a show back in the day, but it made me hit a nostalgic feeling of music videos. So I wanted to do a snake draft with your favorite music videos. So Travis, please start us off. Give me one of your favorite music videos.
Okay, so let's start with this. I have made it abundantly clear that this is not my lane. That music and music videos in particular are not my lane. That being said, the arrival of Thriller back in the 80s was the one thing. You'd sit around, you'd wait for it, they'd have a little countdown going, you know, in 10 minutes it's coming on, in 5 minutes it's coming on, and then the thing lasted like 15 minutes. It was basically a movie in and of itself. So I know that maybe the song isn't a great song in the catalog of Michael Jackson, but I'm taking Thriller with the number one pick.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with picking the GOAT. So most considered that the GOAT of music videos. So Travis, first pick, going safe there with the number one pick. I like that. LZ, you'll have back-to-back because you know what time it is.
Snake draft?
That's right.
It's a snake draft.
Well, the problem is because you went so hard, you came so strong with the goat, I'm already behind the eight ball. So all I can do is try to like minimize the damage by also picking from the same artist catalog.
Okay.
I'm trying to play defense and not offense here. I'm trying to like siphon away some Michael Jackson voters.
Oh, you going to say?
Love Thriller. Well, they may have loved Thriller. But they know, Remember the Time by Michael Jackson was a dope video as well. Magic Johnson in the video. Eddie Murphy in the video. The song was banging. Michael was dancing and grooving. So I'm going to make Remember the Time my pick in an attempt to try to siphon off some of your Michael Jackson voters.
Now, LG, that's probably the GOAT of cameos in videos. Would you agree? Like, the best cameos you ever see. Okay, all right.
That's the Black Hollywood, all in the same video.
All right, what's your next one to double it up there?
And then my next pick, I'm going to go back to that classic MTV number that every single time you see the video, you know what song it is. But more importantly, every time you hear the note, you know what song it is. That is A-ha's Take On Me.
Oh, LZ, you're killing me. That's one of like three videos I actually remember. Oh, my goodness.
Ah. Animation. Yes.
Animation. See, the trick is not only do you need to have a great video, but you need to have a memorable song, too. And everybody knows when he goes, take it.
Yes. Classic 80s beat, classic 80s keyboard coming along right here.
Yes. Exactly. Okay.
Nice pick. That takes me back. All right, Travis.
So incredibly disappointed. I thought I was going to have a little sleeper there with and LZ takes him with the second pick. All right. This is another one. This might have been the last time that MTV was regularly playing videos. And it's been a minute because it was happening when I was in college, which was in the early 1990s. I'm going to go back to the beginning of grunge, Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit. Not only was it a iconic song and the beginning of a genre of music, but the video, that smoky or steamy room or whatever it is, and those guys just banging away at the guitars. I'm going to take this song right here, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
And most people credit this with introducing a new genre of grunge to us. The Seattle rock grunge, and this kind of started it all to most people. So nice pick there. Nice video in the gym. I like it. All right, you got two.
I got two. Right. Yeah. This one here is going way back to the beginning of MTV2. And LZ, you've accused me of being era specific, and I am 100% guilty of the charge. I am of my time, and I'm going to stay with it. But this was a song that was written and performed about being on MTV, I'm talking about Dire Straits and Money for Nothing. Dire Straight, Money Is for Nothing, and The Chicks for Free. So that's my third pick.
One of the great guitar riffs that you'll hear in 80s rock. A great, great song there.
There you go.
There you go. Yep. Starts it off with that. And then that guitar riff coming in. I like it. Good job. Hang on. I almost want to pause for it. I don't know how long it takes. But that's fine. I think it takes too long. That's okay. LZ, your final two, because you know what this is.
It's a snake draft.
That's right.
He's never going to live that down, right? Like, never. We're always going to play that. All right. So for my next pick, I got the Michael Jackson thing solidified. I got A-ha solidified. That's nice and Pearl Jammy. And speaking of Pearl Jammy, that's right, baby, Jeremy. I'm going with Jeremy, baby. A story, a powerful song, and once again, my attempt to siphon off the grunge from Travis's list.
Well done. Jeremy spoken. All right. There you go.
Jeremy spoke in class. When? Mm-hmm. Yesterday? No. Tomorrow? No. Today.
Yes.
Jeremy spoke today. Yes.
Okay. All right.
And now for my final pick. Now this video was dope. This video was dope because it was based upon a dope movie. But it was also dope because it featured someone who deserves so much credit for the way that hip hop sounds, the funk, the rhythm, the playfulness. Roger Troutman's influence in hip hop is well solidified for a variety of reasons. But when he did California Love,
ooh,
Dre and Pac, and they did that video that was dressed up like Mad Max with the camera angles and the whole nine, that just solidified Roger Troutman's place in hip-hop, but it also solidified Pac's place in pop music, and it also solidified his place as a creator of music videos.
Still an anthem for a lot of shows or segments coming back. This song stands the test of time. Good job in the video. Everyone remembers the video. Good call there. All right, that brings us to you, Travis, for your final pick in our favorite, most memorable videos, MTV, BET, wherever. I'm sure you were a BET guy, Travis, so go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, 50-50 for me. 50% of the time, I didn't watch either one. So, okay. Let's see. I have a void in my picks here that I need to rectify. And I have two candidates for the same reason, but I'm ultimately going to go with Janet Jackson and Love Will Never Do Without You, because I was not necessarily a huge Janet Jackson fan. I remember her from Different Strokes when she was Todd Bridges' girlfriend, Charlene. I remember that. And then all of a sudden, that video showed up on MTV like, wait a second, that is Janet Jackson? Where she's out there in the desert with somebody. I don't know who that is. I really didn't know.
Antonio Sabato Jr.
Well, like I said, I didn't know who he was. I've had a feeling somebody else might. So I'll take Janet Jackson, Love Will Never Do Without You, where she is singing out in the desert, looking fantastic. I'll take Janet Jackson.
All right, and that'll wrap it up. And, of course, you can all vote on ESPN Los Angeles Twitter feed. Janice is going to put that up for us. And just to recap real quick, first pick of the draft, Travis takes the GOAT in Thriller, Smells Like Teen Spirit, Money for Nothing, and Love Will Never Do Without You, as you just heard. And LZ counters that with, he wanted to go Say, Say, Say from the Michael Jackson catalog, but no, he went with Remember the Time, Take on Me, Jeremy Spoken, and of course, California Love. So good luck, gentlemen. Of course, this is a 60-game season here, so you'll have an asterisk by your victory, but good job nevertheless.
Look, I'm the Colorado Rockies in this situation. I'll take whatever I can get. If it means I got to go 40-20 over a short period, I will absolutely take it. All right, the Lakers are going to have to make some adjustments to their roster going into the bubble. One of their opted not to return to the team. We'll tell you who and why next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.